Blog Talk Radio.
Schilling for a Monday, May 9th, the year 2016. Week of the Players. Welcome you inside. Joined here on a Monday evening, 66 degrees under sunny skies. We're so glad that you chose to share some of your day with us. It is the Players. GPC Sawgrass will be the venue. We will preview that with Ryan Ballengee coming up at the bottom of the hour. Interesting week. We've had an interesting run in golf, which we'll get to with Ryan, with a lot of weird winners. Fluke winners, out of nowhere winners, the Vaughn Towers, the Brian Stewards, all that stuff. And what's interesting about the Players is if you win an opposite field event, you get into the Players. So we're going to go through some odd named guys. Some off the beaten path names that are playing this week that you may find interesting and want to think about for your fantasy team or as you get ready to watch. So we'll delve into that in a second. We are getting ready for the Olympics. We'll talk a little bit about that. We'll do some other stuff with Ryan. Speaking of other stuff, Steph Curry is listed as questionable. And, you know, Kyle and I had that whole discussion last week about what do you do with Steph and when do you bring Steph back. And he's not questionable for tonight. I don't know if there's an updated status. We'll see. No update, it appears, yet. I would not play him. I would try to get through this game without him. Maybe you bring him back for game five. Maybe you wait, because the problem, as we talked about, is rhythm. But I would wait tonight. I would give him an extra game if you don't end up in an elimination game, obviously. One extra game from when he feels ready, and then bring him back. So we'll see what they do. They have options. And I think Portland, as we saw last game, just had one of those insane shooting performances. And that's what you're going to get sometimes in the playoffs. You will get utterly insane shooting performances. And to me, that was a fluke. That was more of a, this won't happen again, fluke. We'll see if it happens again. But to me, that was just a fluke. And I don't see them repeating that. As the series goes on, they always could. It's always a possibility. Just promoting Mr. Ballengee. Got a little late start here today, but I don't see Portland repeating that performance. And I think Golden State wins this series. Them against San Antonio, if it winds up being San Antonio, is going to be absolutely fascinating. That's a series that could go very many ways. Look at that San Antonio Thunder game in the second half last night. That was top-flight, efficient basketball at its best. We'll see how it translates. We'll see what happens. But to me, that was really good basketball. And a Thunder team who's won and who's not dynasty, but for Knicks fans who have been craving basketball like that, it is a dynasty. But this wave of superior-level player from Oklahoma City could be ending. Once they get eliminated, if Kevin Durant goes elsewhere. So that's something we'll chew on as we continue on in May. We are going to take a commercial break. Come right back in 30 seconds with Mr. Ballinger. Here's Bob Costas, who you'll be seeing at the aforementioned Olympic Games in Rio in just under 100 days.
Sometimes tough isn't enough. Lou Gehrig was baseball's Iron Man, but lost it all to ALS, a muscle-wasting disease that destroyed his skills and ended his life in just a few years. MDA has been leading the fight to vanquish ALS for decades. Truly effective treatments must be found, because the battle Lou Gehrig fought is still being waged in households across America. Call 1-800-572-1717 to learn more about what MDA is doing to strike out ALS and save lives.
We're back on Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling on this Monday, May 9th, the Monday after Nyquist wins the Kentucky Derby, and we'll go for his run at Horse Racing Glory in the Triple Crown over the next month. The favorite with a 2-1 favorite and won fairly convincingly. And it's our pleasure to welcome back to Teeing It Up in his basically every other week spot here over the next 24 weeks or so, our friend from the Golf News Net and Yahoo Sports, Mr. Ryan Ballinger. Hello, sir.
Hey, Jeremy. How are you?
I'm good. Let's start here. I gave 2 weeks ago on the show a very impassioned plea for every big name to play the Olympics. I totally understand if you have Zika fears. I understand Mark Leishman's issue because of his wife and everything that his family went through. But if your complaint is crowded scheduling, I don't buy that. The Olympics and golf in the Olympics is a decision that will be made for 2024 and beyond next year, not in 2020, right. Not in 2019, not in 2021. And my take, this is as hot take as I will ever get on the radio, is that this is a grow the game initiative, especially for a lot of these countries, and that we need a big name to win the gold medal, and ideally all three medals, because that is what will convince the IOC to keep it. We don't need a fluke winner. Now, yes, that is a knockout format, but still, we need every big name to participate, and these guys who are saying crowded scheduling is their reason is a totally BS excuse in my book. What's been your take on what we've seen with these Olympic pullouts?
Well, I agree with you that anyone who is saying it is a scheduling problem is lying to us and lying to themselves. It isn't a scheduling problem. Every year from June, basically the middle of June until the end of September, stinks. You play golf like all the time. If you hate playing golf all the time, it stinks. You play golf all the time. You play three major championships. You play the four FedEx Cup events. If you're fortunate, you play in the WGC in between two majors. So that leads to back-to-back weeks. You might represent your country or your continent or your part of the world if it's that right year for you or if you're in the United States every year. So it's always crowded. So that's not a valid excuse. So if that's the issue, and if Zika is the problem, if that's what people want to say, I'm fine with that because Zika is a legitimate concern. If you want to expand or start your family in the next 6, 12, 18, 24 months, I got it because we don't know yet how long Zika really lasts and how long the potential impacts could be on a mother's child that is infected with Zika virus. Okay, fine, if that's your excuse. But if that's not on your plate, you should be in Rio if you're available. And for that reason that you said, it is an opportunity for the sport to show the IOC that it deserves to be in the Olympic program beyond 2020 and that the sport has some enthusiasm about being a part of the Olympic program. That all said, I still think that there is room to be critical of the Olympic format. It sucks. I think that we could have something better, either amateur-based or team-based or both, or just a different way to inject passion into it. And I also disagree in a small sense with what you said that the best player should win the medals. I do think at least one great player should medal. But let's say someone from the Philippines medals. I think that's cool because in golf terms, that never happens. So I think that then makes a clear appeal to the IOC. There is a reason for Olympic golf because under no other format would you get this result that you got. And that might be good for the game. It might be good for its prospects in the Olympic program moving forward.
I hear you 100% on that. And as we know, and as we saw last Monday, a week ago today, some of the best stories in golf are the lesser-known, off-the-beaten-path names. Perfect segue to the next question that I had for you, which pertains to the players. One thing that some people out there may not know is that the winners of the opposite field events and the fall events and some of these events that don't get you to Augusta, the fall events get you to Augusta. The opposite field events don't. But the bottom line is there's some names in here that are not the Big Four, the Big Five, the Big Six that could be viable contenders this week. And it's an interesting situation in light of the fact that we have had a run here on kind of fluky winners. So I'm just going to give you some names. This is all from the 2015-16 season. Who of these names do you think has the best shot to pull off of Vaughn Taylor? Is it Vaughn Taylor? Is it Peter Monnally? Russell Knox? Is it Fabian Gomez? Is it Brian Stewart? Is it Jim Herman? Is it Tony Finau? Is it James Hahn? Is it Charlie Hoffman, who I think is known but may not be to some other people? Is it who won the Barracuda? That was J.J. Henry, I believe, who won the Barracuda.
Yeah.
Yep, it was J.J. Henry and Scott Piercy who won the Barbasol Championship. Of those names I just rattled out, who do you like the most?
I think I like Russell Knox. He seems to have a good record on at least one Pete Dye golf course, which is TPC New Orleans or Louisiana. So at least he's demonstrated an ability to play well on Pete Dye designs. Haven't really seen that from a lot of the other guys. So I think he would probably be my guy. He's kind of the prototype. Hit the kind of far so he could take advantage of the par fives when he's in the right position. But he's also not so long that he can't adjust to playing a style of golf where sometimes you do have to hit a mid or a long iron in because you hit a bad approach or bad tee shot or bad layup or something like that. So I think of those guys, Russell Knox is my kind of, not from out of left field pick, but a guy that once he gets up there, people are going to go, who is this guy? And then see where it takes.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. And Knox is somebody who I can certainly see putting up a strong run, especially since he's Scottish. And for some reason, these international players tend to play Pete Dye courses well. Maybe it's because they have to position their balls well, and that's how they grew up. Obviously, he is. Obviously, Russell has had a home base here for a long time, but that could be something. For me, I look at Tony Finau, and I look at Tony Finau in the sense of he can overpower a golf course, which is dangerous. He can be too long and too good for his own good, which is dangerous. But I like the swagger that he has. And I think what we saw with Ricky last year in the playoff, and yes, Ricky is not Tony Finau, but what we saw in the playoff is that it sometimes can take a little swagger to win at the Players. It can take a little swagger to combat 16, 17, 18. And in that light, why not him?
I don't necessarily disagree with that point of view. I think that you do have to have a kind of a repartee with the crowd at Sawgrass. You know, you kind of got to be able to embrace that they're going to be a little crazy. They're going to be a little drunk. They're going to cheer at awkward times, that they kind of want to see blood on 17, but they're just as happy to see brilliance, so they're going to cheer both. So you're right. I mean, think about what Ricky Fowler did playing 18 the two times he played on Sunday last year. He bomb drives, 330 down the middle both times, and it set him up really to have the opportunity of a lifetime for him.
Yeah.
So I think that is something Finau can do. It's something he did when he won in Puerto Rico. Now, the drives that he hit in the playoff against Steve Marino, not all of them were exactly pretty, but he had the confidence to bring out driver, and it set him up for the win that he ultimately got. So length can certainly be a factor, and confidence means everything on those final three holes, really the last fix holes because, I mean, starting at 13, you've got to hit that tee shot in the perfect spot on the par 3 to get to that hole location on Sunday. On 14, you can't snap hook it in the water. On 15, you got to hit a confident fade. 16, you got to think about it as an eagle hole, so you've got to just bust one off the tee right down the middle. 17, obviously, is a confidence hole, and so is 18, which is the one that probably makes everyone pucker up the most on the golf course. So Finau has the mental wherewithal to be able to stand that kind of pressure, sure.
My thing about the Puerto Rico win, and both of us were watching that stream, I agreed with, I forgot who the announcer was, but I thought that he was purposely hitting it over there and just taking the slice as it came because he got so far down in those right trees that he had a pretty open line. So I actually thought that was a genius play by him.
And maybe that was totally the case. I mean, I wasn't sure, and then by the end they kept doing it. I was like, okay, maybe he is doing this on purpose. And
exactly.
If he's not doing it on purpose, he's acting like he did it on purpose, which is what you should do in that spot if you're a professional. Okay, well, I'm not where I need to be, but I'm right where I want to be. I'm not in the water. I'm not in the woods. I can play it. I got a chance. And that's what Finau seems to be able to do.
Yeah, exactly. SB2K16, the greatest thing to come to golf probably in the last 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, maybe even better than Tiger Woods Spring Break 2016, I dare say. Seriously, though, and we've talked about this online, I thought this was the best possible thing that could have ever happened to Jordan Spieth. You go out there, you just let loose with your friends, yet you play golf, and you have fun, and you laugh it off, and you do silly things, so that your last golf memory is not choking down the stretch at Augusta, but instead it is having fun with your friends at Baker's Bay in the Bahamas. I was so for this and so happy to see what Jordan did, and I think it's going to prove huge dividends going forward. So, A, your take on that, and B, Jordan's had some inconsistencies in the 2 years he's played in this event, and I was looking it up today. It comes down to the green pit. He hit 20-some-odd percent more greens when he tied for sixth here back in 2014 than when he missed the cut last year. What do you think his chances are this week?
If he plays the Players like he did in the Masters, he's going to fall flat in his face. And I don't mean just the 12th hole. I mean, he was not at his best from tee to green throughout the course of that week and somehow managed to hang on without his best stuff. You can't get away with missing a lot of greens like that at Sawgrass. The penalties, I think, are more severe in certain spots than you get at Augusta National. They just create more awkwardness. At Augusta, you at least have a chance to get up and down when you hit it bad, unless you find a hazard. But that course is designed to give you an opportunity to get back what you lost. Peak Dye is not that way. At least I don't feel that way about the stadium course. If you make a bad mistake, you're going to pay, and you're going to pay dearly. It's more like a U.S. Open setup in that regard. So I don't think Spieth can just kind of be lackadaisical from tee to green and just let a short game save him. He's got to be able to play solidly from tee to green. He's got to be able to score on the par fives. He's got to be able to use his wedge game to his advantage, which he's brilliant at from 125 in it. If he can play that kind of golf well, take advantage of the fives, like I said, take advantage of the short fours, he could find himself in a position come Sunday to have a chance. And for him to make that kind of comeback after what happened in Augusta would be pretty special.
Yeah, I totally agree. Spring Break 2K16.
You know, I don't have any issue with it. I mean, I don't think it was the greatest thing since sliced bread, but I don't think it was in any way whatsoever bad. There's nothing bad about that. I mean, I didn't understand Jeff Shackelford kind of poo-pooing the whole thing, like, oh, it's terrible. These guys are setting a bad example. I did all of that stuff when I was 25. I did way worse than that when I was 25. So they're not setting a bad example for anybody. If anything, that's what a Boy Scouts version of that trip looks like, where, you know, guys who are professionals, have a lot of money, and know that they should kind of handle their liquor a little better than I did when I was 25, how to handle their liquor. So I kind of took away with it, hey, these guys are pretty responsible. Like, I wouldn't – if I was a rich athlete, I wouldn't play my sport on vacation. They're practicing while they're drinking. I mean, I would have cut out the golf entirely and just drank the whole week. So I don't understand what anybody is saying about a negative example here. I thought this was a pretty good example of how you can have a pleasurable vacation and still fit in some work.
Yeah, exactly. We're talking to Ryan Ballingy about the Players. Ricky, Rory, and Phil all had very weird finishes last week at the Wells Fargo Championship. Phil couldn't play the 18th hole. If he doesn't make a quad on Saturday, he probably wins the darn thing. Rory had some problems earlier in the week, which obviously set up his issues on Sunday where he had to force it, and then obviously he has hits the wrong shot in the 18 and ends up over the top of the water. And Ricky hits one out of bounds by a house on number 7, and in all the years this event has existed, I've never seen anybody that far right on number 7. Obviously, Ricky, you know, is the defending champion, so he's got good vibes. But in terms of what have you done for me lately, would you pick any of these guys this week? Phil seems the closest to finally break through of any of these three guys, but they've all had kind of weird blips at times recently.
Phil seems close. I mean, he has 4 top tens this year. I think Justin Ray said that, and you can obviously look this up on PGAtour.com, but that's more top 10 finishes than his last 2 years combined. So he's getting there. But he still makes that Phil mistake where you're like, oh, if he didn't do this, he wins. And that happens way too often for Phil. When he played his most efficient golf, not his best, but his most efficient golf with Butch Harmon was when he decided to play course management golf. He doesn't like that. And you got to do that to win at Sawgrass. So I don't think he's the guy. I think he's enjoying playing go-for-it, step-on-the-pedal golf again. To his detriment or to his enjoyment, whatever. But that's the reality. I think Ricky showed a lot last week, you know, Sunday. It sounded like it was a mud ball on 7 that might have gotten him a little bit with that approach. Now, obviously, that doesn't explain fanning it all that far right, but maybe a little bit. You know, maybe he tried to hit a draw that just didn't, and ultimately that's what got him. I don't know for sure, but I think he's playing very good golf, and I don't buy into this notion that you have to have some kind of killer instinct to win on the PGA Tour week to week, because if that were the case, a lot of guys wouldn't win. Brian Stewart wouldn't have won. Vaughn Taylor wouldn't have won. You wouldn't get James Hahn winning for a second time, so I don't buy that notion. I think for Fowler, he's just kind of got to decide to take things by the horn. He seems to kind of let the tournament come to him instead of going after it himself. That's why all of his wins are either by a stroke or in a playoff. I think if he can get away from that for 1 week and just not care what anyone around him is doing, just play every hole as he likes to, like he did the final 6 holes last year, then he could blow away fields, not week to week, but he can blow them away. And I think he needs to have a win like that at some point in his career to really jumpstart what he is capable of doing.
Mudballs get me. Mudballs always get me because I had mud in front of my ball on Saturday, and you so rarely hear about mud in front of the ball on Saturday. And this is a completely separate discussion on a completely separate topic. But are you somebody that believes that a rule should be changed to allow balls that have mud on them or balls that end up in divots to be cleaned slash moved? Or is that a rub of the green thing?
I don't know. I think so. I mean, I think if you're in the fairway, you earned a good lie. You didn't earn a bad lie. That's what the point of the fairway is. So it may not be an even lie. It may not be a perfect lie, but you earned a good lie. And so for you to wind up with a mud ball or in a divot, that shouldn't be a penalty for hitting a good shot. Or in the case of the PGA Tour, when you play these courses where everybody kind of hits in the same area because everyone plays the course pretty much the same way, that's just bad luck at that point. So in a tour setting, I think absolutely the rule should be changed, that you should be able to move it over, you know, your point of relief, and then you get not a club length. That's too much, but we can come up with something where you can roll the ball and get a good lie or whatever. So, yes, I do think that rule should go away.
And you know, the reason why I bring that up is that, you know, that has an effect on you mentally and it can take some time to recover. And I do believe that it takes a certain kind of mental game to win this week. And you can't let issues like that phase you. The weather's apparently supposed to be good, but you still can't let issues like that phase you. This is the first time we're going to see Danny Willett since the win in Augusta.
Mm-hmm.
has taken up PGA Tour membership. It's mostly for the FedEx Cup playoffs, so we're not going to see him for a while over here except for majors and a random event. Quickly, what how do you gauge his chances this week? I personally don't think he's going to be the most consistent major champion we've seen in a while. I think we're going to see some real bad tournaments from him at times.
He's the kind of guy that needs to play a lot to do well. I mean, that's why he did so well in the European Tour last year. It's what it seems apparent to me. He's one of those guys, not a VJ, but a VJ, that needs to play 25, 30 times a year to get into the rhythm. And he's going to have some bad weeks, but when he gets into rhythm, he's great for 3, 4, 5 weeks in a row. And that's kind of the guy that he is. And that's fine, but that means he hasn't played in a while, and it's not going to be very good this week, if our theory is right.
Who do you like? Who do you don't like?
Yeah, I haven't settled on somebody I like. You know, this could be a – I don't know. I've been so discouraged the last, like, month and a half now with all these randoms winning. And that's not to say they're bad golfers. It just opens the field up so, so much. I really do like Ricky Fowler this week. I know that it's been almost 11 years since the guy top-10ed in his defense. Actually, it's been 10 years since the guy top-10ed in his defense at the Players, which was Adam Scott. So, yeah, I like him. Justin Rose has a good record on Pete Dye golf courses. Why shouldn't he be able to play well? I think he's got a chance. I think Jordan Spieth, if, as I prefaced this earlier, does not miss a ton of greens, he should be able to do very well this week. So those are kind of the trio of guys I like.
Yeah, me too. I do think Ricky has a chance this week. My guy is Phil. My sleeper is Paul Casey. Paul Casey's been on way too many leaderboards lately to not win. And
yeah.
I don't give a chance to Danny Willett. Nothing personal to him. I just think that we are looking at one of the more inconsistent major champions, as you just said, inconsistent major winners lately. And I think that while he has risen up in the majors and the WGCs, which is why he was my sleeper to win Augusta, I think he's going to be somebody that will take a little time to get to have a good, comfortable feeling with this burden.
Yeah, I think it'll take him a little while to figure out how to really get used to being a major champion, being on the stage consistently, and the expectations that come with it. I hope I'm wrong. I hope he's a good player and steps up and absorbs being a major champion and can do something with it, but I kind of get the feeling that won't be the case.
Sergio, you know, you talked earlier about the atmosphere. Sergio combated some heckling last year, and you know, you and I both don't like mashed potatoes, and there was something else said this past weekend that I can't think of at the moment, but it was really weird. But it happens, and that's what happens when alcohol gets into you. Do you think Sergio will ever get past this mental hurdle? Because for me, it's all mental. He's got the game to do it. You and I both know that. But
yeah, I mean, think about it. Think about the two of the last 3 years. He's been in it to win. I mean, he was right there with Tiger. He was right there last year. So I think that goes to show you how good Sergio Garcia is, that he's that big of a head case and can still fight through all of that, at least at Sawgrass, and nearly win two of the last 3 years. That's amazing. And that must be a place because he feels good because he's won there. That's the only thing that can explain it. So he got it the one time against Paul Guedos in the right situation, and now he feels like he can do it. But there's just enough doubt in his mind from all the other bad stuff that's happened to him, whether he believes it happened to him or he did it to himself, that prevents him from winning. So I think he can contend. I look to him to contend. I think he's a great guy for like a one-and-done league. But it's hard to ever say Sergio is going to win something.
Two yes or no questions. Number one, does Tim Finchem give his official leave date this week?
That's a good question. I think he will. I think he's – whatever project it is he's working on, and I have a feeling it's something to do with rights and digital, but whatever it is he's working on, I think this is kind of going to be his victory lap this week where he says, this is what I'm working on. This is what's going to be done. This is what there's supposed to be a PGA, LPGA announcement this week. Here's what that is. Goodbye, everybody. see you later. Here's Jay Monahan. So I do think he will say when he's leaving this week.
Does Tiger come back at Jack's place?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's enough evidence out there now to suggest this is where he intends to come back. And if he intends to play the Open, as it sounds like that's what his intention is, he's got to play once beforehand, and there is literally no better place for him in the weeks leading into the U.S. Open than Memorial. So I think so.
Ryan Ballengee, it's a pleasure. Thanks as always.
Thanks, Jeremy. See ya.
That's teeing it up for today. We'll see you next week, everybody. Enjoy.